Hello, this is Terry Malloy, here to read the week, the best of U.S. and international media. I'm again reading from the October 18th, 2019 volume, All You Need to Know About Everything That Matters. And this week we have United Kingdom, Harry and Meghan versus the tabloids. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex have declared all-out war on the British newspaper industry, said Jim Watterson and Caroline Davies in The Guardian. Prince Harry and his wife Meghan have filed two blockbuster lawsuits against media outlets in the past week. First, Harry sued the owners of the Sun and Daily Mirror tabloids over the alleged hacking of his mobile phone by journalists in the early 2000s. Days later, Meghan launched a legal case against the Mail on Sunday for alleged breach of privacy and copyright infringement over its publication of a private letter she wrote to her estranged father in 2018. Quote, neither of the actions appears to be guaranteed success, unquote, said the Times in an editorial. The letter in which Meghan pleaded with her dad to stop telling lies to the media was handed willingly by her father to the Mail. In the phone hacking case, which resulted in numerous prison sentences, may fall outside the 6-year statute of limitations. But Harry seems determined to take a stand, saying the tabloids have vilified his wife almost daily for the past 9 months. Harry and Meghan aren't fighting for their right to privacy, said Piers Morgan in the Daily Mail. They want to silence journalists for exposing their hypocrisy. The couple lecture ordinary folk about the need to cut carbon emissions, then jump on private jets every 2 minutes. They use $2.9 million in public funds to refurbish their luxury home, but Meghan wouldn't let the public take photos of her at Wimbledon. The two live a life of phenomenal privilege, but still see themselves as poor, downtrodden, massively misunderstood victims of horrified press bullies. Most pathetic of all is Harry's invocation of his mother when moaning about the media, said Kamala Long in the Sunday Times. The prince says he fears that his wife is falling victim to the same powerful forces that led to the death of Princess Diana in a 1997 car crash. But history isn't repeating itself. All Meghan has had to deal with is a few gossip columnists criticizing her eco-absurdity and her refusal to release more photos of her royal baby, Archie. It's not quite the same as being chased to death by paparazzi, as Harry claims it is. There's something creepy about the clamor for the Sussexes to pull out, said Gabby Hinsliffe in The Guardian. Give us another look at your kid, the press crows, and quit whining about your privacy. The argument is reminiscent of drunk suits braying at a lap dancer they don't feel has gone far enough for the money. Behind all this lurk some ugly assumptions that this particular princess, a mixed-race American divorcee from an ordinary background, might be fair game in a way other royal brides were not. The royals cost the nation $100 million a year, and the public wants its money's worth. But it's the crowd, not the people, stripped bare before them, who seem diminished by the sight. Some of the best columns in Europe. Demoralized Police Need Help by Xavier Bruy in Le Republican Lorraine. Our police are in crisis, said Xavier Brule. Months of clashes with yellow vest protesters and black bloc anarchists have worn down a force weary of protecting a French public that openly reviles them. Last week, 27,000 off-duty, out-of-uniform officers marched through Paris to protest their working conditions. There's plenty to complain about. dilapidated police stations, lack of staff and equipment, no overtime pay. So far this year, 52 of our nation's 150,000 officers have committed suicide. And just a day after the march came, a gruesome attack from within the force itself. An administrator who works at the Paris police headquarters suddenly began stabbing his colleagues with a knife, killing four before being shot to death. The 45-year-old man was a Muslim convert who had been communicating with Islamic extremists online. The attack is being investigated as suspected terrorism, as if to underscore yet another danger that our officers face daily. The police are working on the front line of a society that is still reeling from the 2008 financial meltdown and the austerity measures forced on it by successive governments. Our officers feel the same despair and exhaustion as the rest of the nation. The diagnosis is burnout. But what is the cure? The talking points. Republicans, will they stick with Trump? A torrent of impeachment developments has triggered a reckoning in the Republican Party, said Robert Costa and Philip Rucker in the Washington Post. In the halls of Congress, GOP senators can be spotted sharing hushed conversations about constitutional and moral considerations over President Trump's conduct, knowing that giving public voice to such concerns could cost them their seats. The president's command over the Republican base is uncontested, and he has proved more than willing to visit his wrath upon any Republican who gets out of line. Still, with troubling new revelations coming daily, Republicans are left to offer little aside from silence, shrugged shoulders, or pained defenses. They will likely retreat to the rationale Tucker Carlson provided last week, said Oliver Darcy in CNN.com. In an op-ed published in the Daily Caller, the Fox News host conceded that Trump's pressure on Ukraine's president to investigate Joe Biden was wrong, but contended that it's hard to argue that Trump's conduct rose to the level of an impeachable offense. There is a very sensible reason why Republicans are loath to buck Trump, said Daniel McCarthy in Spectator.us. They can't win a presidential election without him. The country's demographic and cultural changes have made orthodox Reagan/Bush conservatism unpopular. Rust Belt states can't be won by a Republican promising free trade and pro-big business policies. Trump's angry populism puts states like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania in play. When Trump is gone, Republicans will have to reinvent themselves again, and they currently have no idea how to do it. In the short term, Republicans are unlikely to turn on Trump, said Lee Drutman in 538.com. He defines the Republican Party brand as president, so if Trump is unpopular, the Republican Party is unpopular. But the calculus could change if they fear a severely damaged Trump will cost the GOP not only the White House in 2020, but also the Senate. Look for a single, bold leader from the GOP to stand up and signal to the rest of the herd that it's okay to stop defending Trump for what's increasingly indefensible. It can't be a moderate like Senator Mitt Romney, but a rank-and-file Republican senator who is up for re-election in a solidly red state, someone like Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana or Senator Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma. If they waver, that will signal that Trump's days are numbered. The NBA groveling before China. The NBA encourages players and coaches to take progressive political stands, unless, apparently, the autocratic leaders of a lucrative market raise a little stink, said Daniel Victor in NYTimes.com. With NBA teams in China this month for preseason exhibitions, Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey tweeted, quote, "Fight for freedom. Stand with Hong Kong," unquote. The Rockets, China's favorite team since Houston drafted 7'6" legend Yao Ming, promptly threw Morey under the bus for angering the mainland, which views Hong Kong's pro-democracy demonstrators as violent rioters. The NBA's apology in Chinese read, quote, "We are deeply disappointed about Morey's inappropriate comment," unquote. The apology wasn't enough for China, and its TV network canceled broadcasts of NBA preseason games. The league's groveling drew bipartisan disgust with Senator Rick Scott, a Republican from Florida, accusing league executives of kowtowing to Beijing to protect their bottom line. "Sorry, but appeasing China is the cost of doing business there," said Tyler Cohen in Bloomberg.com. When Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta tweeted, quote, "We are not a political organization," unquote, he was right. The NBA is committed to a major expansion in China, where it has more than 500 million fans and a new $1.5 billion broadcasting deal. It's entirely reasonable for the NBA, like any other business, to ask employees to avoid political commentary that alienates partners or customers. Hundreds of U.S. businesses operate in China, said Brian Boyle in the Los Angeles Times, and they all have to bend to China's demands and ignore their human rights abuses. Hollywood, for example, censors films to cater to China's authoritarian standards. When billions of dollars are at stake, businesses will do what China wants. The citizens of Hong Kong be damned. U.S. businesses that deal with China are now at a moral crossroads, said Michael Brendan Doherty in NationalReview.com. Free trade with China has certain conditions attached, and it's been shocking to see how quickly and easily Chinese authoritarianism is able to spread into American life through corporate power. Just look at Rocket star James Harden rushing to defuse his boss's statement by saying, "We apologize. We love China." Harden, one of the top earners in U.S. pro sports, speaks for many among the Americans' business elite, said Rich Lowry in the New York Post. They'll flaunt their woke social conscience so long as any activism involved is costless. CrowdStrike, the Ukraine conspiracy theory. When President Trump had his infamous July 25th phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, he wasn't just looking for dirt on Joe Biden, said Scott Shane in the New York Times. Trump was also chasing proof of a right-wing conspiracy theory that Russia never actually hacked the Democratic National Committee during the 2016 election. Trump has become obsessed with the idea that Ukraine did the hacking and then framed Russia with the help of the DNC and CrowdStrike, the cybersecurity firm hired to investigate the attack. The theory has been eagerly promoted by Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, as well as by far-right websites and Russian state news outlets. Trump's White House advisors have repeatedly tried to convince Trump the theory is bogus. Nevertheless, Trump pressed Zelensky to find out what happened, with CrowdStrike adding that he believed the DNC server itself might be in the Ukraine. "Behold the full majesty of this Byzantine conspiracy theory," said Tim Miller in the Bulwark.com. A cable of Democratic operatives and deep state intelligence agencies allegedly plotted with Ukraine to create dirt on Trump. First, they fed a low-level Trump staffer, George Papadopoulos, false stories that Russians hacked Hillary Clinton's emails, knowing he'd boast about it and give the FBI an excuse to investigate. For the theory to work, you have to believe the Democrats willingly leaked their own embarrassing emails. You also have to explain why the FBI publicly reopened the investigation into Clinton just days before the election, while saying nothing about investigating Trump. Apparently, MAGA heads think the intel community was going to stop Trump by getting him elected and then making his life miserable with endless investigations. Mind blown. Let's not mince words here. The president is spouting a baseless conspiracy theory, said Noah Rothman in CommentaryMagazine.com. The special counsel investigation proved in excruciating detail that Russia interfered in the U.S. election, leading to criminal charges against a dozen named Kremlin agents. Trump has always loved conspiracy theories, said Peter Beinart in TheAtlantic.com, such as the one accusing President Obama of being born abroad and Ted Cruz's father of being involved in the John F. Kennedy assassination. But in leaning on Ukraine to confirm CrowdStrike, Trump made a conspiracy theory the basis of American foreign policy. The Poll Watch. As the Supreme Court starts a new term, 54% of Americans say they approve of the way the court is handling its job, including 73% of Republicans and 38% of Democrats. 42% disapprove of the court's job performance. 47% say the court's ideological stance is about right. 33% say it's too conservative. And 17% think it is too liberal. This is from the Gallup poll. Health and science this week. Is red meat back on the menu? An international team of researchers has concluded that cutting back on red and processed meat consumption has no significant health benefits, a controversial finding that contradicts decades of studies and has sparked furious responses from nutritional scientists. Groups such as the American Heart Association and the World Cancer Research Fund have recommended for years that people eat less beef, lamb, pork, and processed meats, such as bologna, because of evidence linking them to heart disease, stroke, cancer, and other illnesses. But after evaluating more than 130 studies covering some 4 million participants, the international panel of researchers said there was only weak, low-quality evidence linking red meat consumption with disease and early death. For the majority of people, but not everyone, continuing the red and processed meat consumption is the right approach. Lead author Bradley Johnston, an epidemiologist at Dalhousie University in Canada, tells Time.com. But many nutritional scientists claim that the team's research method was deeply flawed. They note that the new study relied primarily on randomized controlled studies, which are commonly used in drug trials, rather than in observational studies that make up the bulk of nutritional research. Those studies are conducted by tracking the eating habits and health outcomes of people over many years. The new research says cardiologist Elizabeth Clotus, quote, just adds to the confusion for patients. The conclusions are not the conclusions of the medical community, unquote. New vaping sickness theory. Toxic chemical fumes might be responsible for the surge in vaping-related lung injuries across the U.S., a new Mayo study has found. More than 1,000 e-cigarette users have been hospitalized in recent months, and at least 18 have died. Many of those sickened used bootleg vaping liquids containing THC, THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. Tests have shown that some black market producers diluted expensive THC oil with vitamin E acetate. That led health experts to suspect that this greasy substance was causing the e-cigarette illnesses by coating the lungs after being inhaled and triggering an inflammatory response. But when Mayo Clinic researchers examined lung biopsies from 17 people who got sick after vaping, about two-thirds of whom had used THC cartridges, they found no signs of oil accumulation. Instead, the tissue had damage consistent with a chemical burn injury, pathologist Brandon Larson told the New York Times, similar to that seen in people exposed to airborne poisons like mustard gas. It's still not clear what harmful substance is causing the injuries or whether the toxin is in the vaping fluid or materials used to make the vaping device. Health scare of the week. Rocking out behind the wheel. Listening to pumping rock music while cruising down the highway might make driving more enjoyable, but it also raises your risk of crashing, reports the Sunday Times in the UK. Researchers in China recruited 20 volunteers and put them in a simulator that mimics the experience of driving down a six-lane freeway. Each participant took three drives. One, while listening to a fast rock track with a tempo of at least 120 beats per minute. One, with a gentler music of around 80 BPM. And one with no music at all. When the up-tempo rock played, the test subjects increased their speed driving 5 to 10 miles faster than when listening to slow music or nothing at all. They also crossed lanes 140 times on average, twice as many times as those listening to slower tunes, suggesting they were more likely to crash. Lead researcher Zhang Zhang says the extra brain power that it takes to process fast rock riffs might distract drivers by increasing their mental workload. The scientists put the Green Day song, American Idiot, which has BPM of 189, at the top of their most dangerous driving music list. Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven was ranked least dangerous. Brokers. Stock trading commissions face extinction. The price war between discount brokerages can't go much farther than this, said Annie Massa and John Gittleson in Bloomberg.com. In the latest salvo, Charles Schwab last week announced plans to completely eliminate fees on trades, which used to cost $4.95 each. Soon after, TD, Ameritrade, and E-Trade followed suit, feeling they had no choice in an intensifying industry-wide war over fees for everything from stock trades to index funds and financial advice. Schwab is betting it can make up lost revenue by attracting more clients. But the race to the bottom has some observers wondering whether anyone can win in a business where more and more services are handed out for free. Schwab, once upon a time, was the new entrant paving the way for retail investors, said Tara Siegel-Bernard in the New York Times. Now, though, access to the stock and bond markets has never been easier or cheaper. Exchange-traded funds have driven management fees far below what mutual funds used to charge. Robo-advisors will build and monitor your nest egg for a tiny fraction of the cost of your grandfather's financial advisor. In this environment, the elimination of trading commissions has been pretty much inevitable. How will brokers make money by executing your trades for free? Asked Josh Barrow in New York Magazine. The answer is the same way banks make money. Schwab, which now has a total of $3.7 trillion in clients' accounts, takes cash deposits from account holders, pays a small amount of interest on those balances, and then earns a lot more interest by lending those balances out. If Schwab makes its brokerage product more attractive by offering zero free trades, that may induce customers to bring more business to Schwab, including more cash balances, which Schwab can earn a net interest margin on. That net interest margin accounted for 57% of Schwab's revenues last year. Rockbottom prices could incentivize overtrading or risky stock bets, said Andrew Keschner in MarketWatch.com. One financial planner warns that zero-cost trades encourage a frequent trading strategy that makes most people do poorly rather than a buy-and-hold approach, which would be better. Speaking of financial planners, said Nir Kesar in Bloomberg.com, your financial advisor is Schwab's next target. The average financial advisor continues to collect roughly 1% a year on accounts of $1 million and more for smaller accounts. Schwab and other discount brokers have already been making a big push into the high-end advisory business. Independent financial advisors who often use Schwab's accounts to trade for their clients say they love the new commission-free trades. Do they know that Schwab is about to eat their lunch? What the experts say, cable always full of surprises. Why is cable bill always higher than the advertised, asked James Wilcox in Consumer Reports. Add-on fees. We asked hundreds of our members to share their cable bills with us, and our analysis showed that company-imposed fees added more than $37 per month, or 24% to the base cost of their TV package. That's nearly $450 a year. The most common add-ons are the broadcast TV fee, which the cable companies say defrays costs they pay to local networks such as ABC and CBS, a set-top box or receiver fee of $7 to $13, and a regional sports surcharge fee, which can add $7 to $12 per month to your bill, even if you don't watch sports. The largest number of complaints were directed toward Comcast Xfinity service, but members cited a number of providers. Well, that's it for this week. This is Terry Malloy wishing you all a great week ahead. I'll be back next Sunday to read the week.